This Hollow Union. To William Dufresne and Tavia Gilbert, and any other audiobook narrator who might work in the Old Man's War universe, thanks for giving these characters a voice. Part 1. I have to tell you that I am deeply concerned that our union is on the verge of collapse, Briston Louse said to me. It's been said, and I suspect largely by people who are not terribly fond of me, that I, Hoff de Sorval, am the second most powerful person in the known universe. It's certainly true that I am the confidant and closest advisor of General Tarsem Gow, the leader of the Conclave, the largest known political union, with over 400 constituent member species, none of whom number less than 1 billion souls. It is also true that in my role as confidant and advisor to Tarsem, I have a great deal of choice in terms of which things to bring to his attention. Also that Tarsem chooses to use me strategically to solve a number of problems he would prefer not to be seen involved with, and in those cases I have a wide amount of personal discretion in solving the problem, with the full resources of the Conclave at my disposal. So yes, it would not be inaccurate to say that I am indeed the second most powerful person in the known universe. Note well, however, that being the second most powerful person in the universe is very much like being the second most of anything, which is to say, not the first, and receiving none of the benefits of being the first. And as my position and status derive entirely from the grace and need of the actual most powerful person in the universe, my ability to exercise the prerogatives of my power are, shall we say, constrained. And now you know why it is said of me by the people who are not terribly fond of me. However, this suits my personal inclinations. I don't mind having the power that is given to me, but I have only rarely grasped for it myself. My position has come largely from being usefully competent to others, each more powerful than the next. I have always been the one who stands behind, the one who counts heads, the one who offers advice. And also, the one who has to sit in meetings with anxious politicians, listening to them ring whatever appendages they ring about the end of all things. In this case, Briston Louse, the Chancellor of the Grand Assembly of the Conclave, an august political body that I was always aware of having a grammatical redundancy in its title, but nevertheless, not to be ignored. Briston Louse sat in my office, staring up at me, for I am tall, even for a Lollan. She held in her hand a cup of yet, a hot drink from her planet, which was a traditional morning pick-me-up. She had it in her hand because I offered it, as was customary, and because she was, at a very early time on the clock, my first meeting for the Sir, the Conclave's standard day. In truth, Briston, are you ever not concerned that our union is on the verge of collapse? I asked, and reached for my own cup, which was not filled with yet, which to me tasted like what might happen if you let a dead animal ferment in a jug of water in hot sunlight for an unfortunately long period of time. Louse made a head movement, which I knew corresponded to a frown. You are mocking my concern, Counselor, she asked. Not at all, I said. I am offering tribute to your conscientiousness as Chancellor. No one knows the Assembly better than you, and no one is more aware of the shifts in alliances and strategies. This is why we meet every 5, sir, and I am grateful we do. With that said, you do proclaim concern about the collapse of the Conclave on a regular basis. You suspect hyperbole. I see clarity. All right, Louse said, and set down her yet, undrunk. Then here is clarity for you. I see the collapse of the Conclave because General Gao has been pressing for votes in the Assembly that he shouldn't be. I see it because his enemies have been pushing votes to counter and undermine the general's power, and they are losing by smaller margins with each outing. For the first time, there is open dissatisfaction with him and with the direction of the Conclave. For the first time, I said. I seem to recall an attempted coup in the not-ancient past, brought on by his decision not to punish the humans for the destruction of our fleet at the Roanoke colony. A small group of discontents, trying to take advantage of what they saw as a moment of weakness on the part of the general. Which almost succeeded, if you recall. I remember the knife coming down toward his neck, and missiles immediately thereafter. Laos waved this away. "You're missing my point," she said. "That was a coup, an attempt to wrest power from the general by extra-legal means. What I see now with every vote is the power and influence, the moral standing, of the general being whittled away. You know that Yun Li Hado, among others, wants to put the general to a confidence vote. If things progress, it won't be long until he gets his wish." I drank from my cup. Yun Li Hado had recently challenged General Gao's actions dealing with the Human Colonial Union, and been knocked back when he asserted evidence of new human colonies that turned out not to exist. Or, more accurately, they had been so thoroughly removed from their planets by the Colonial Union that there was no hard evidence they had ever existed. Those colonies had been quietly removed at General Gao's request. Hado had been fed the outdated information on their existence in order to be made to look like a fool. And it had worked. He had looked like a fool when he attempted to call out the general. What I and the general had underestimated were the number of other assembly members who would willingly continue to follow a fool. "The general isn't a member of the assembly," I said. "A confidence vote wouldn't be binding."
"Wouldn't it?" Laos said.
"The assembly can't remove the general from the leadership of the conclave, no. There's no mechanism for it. But you understand that a no-confidence vote on the general is the fatal crack in his armor. After that, General Gao is no longer the beloved and almost mythical founder of the conclave. He's merely another politician who has overstayed his welcome."
"You are the chancellor of the assembly," I noted. "You could keep a confidence vote on the general from reaching the floor."
"I could," Laos agreed. "But I could not then keep the confidence vote on me from reaching the floor. And once I was out of the way, Hado, or more likely one of his more pliable lieutenants, would ascend to my position. The general's confidence vote would not be avoided, merely delayed."
"And what if it were to happen?" I asked, setting down my cup. "The general is not under the illusion that he will be the head of the conclave forever. The conclave is meant to survive him, and me, and you." Laos stared at me. In point of fact, as Laos had no eyelids, she was always staring, but in this case it was with intent.
"What is it?" I said.
"You have to be joking, Hafta," Laos said. "You have to be either joking or oblivious to the fact that it is General Gao himself who has kept the conclave together. It's loyalty to him and his idea of the conclave that kept it from falling apart after Roanoke. It was loyalty to him that allowed it to survive the coup attempt that followed. The general knows this, at least. He made everyone swear personal loyalty to him. You were the first to swear it."
"I also warned him of the dangers of doing it," I said.
"And you were right," Laos said, "technically. But he was right that at that moment it was loyalty to him that kept the conclave in one piece. It still does.
We have perhaps moved on from that personal loyalty. That's what the general has worked toward, what we have all worked toward."
"We're not there," Laos said. "If General Gao is made to step down, then the center of the conclave falls away. Will this union still exist? For a while. But the union will be hollow, and the factions that already exist now will pull away. The conclave will fracture, and then those factions will fracture again. And we'll be back to where we were before. I see it, Hafta. It's almost inevitable at this point."
"Almost," I said.
"We can avoid a fracture, for now," Laos said. "Buy some time and perhaps heal the fracture. But the general has to give up something he wants very much."
"Which is?"
"He has to give up the Earth."
I reached for my cup again. "The humans from Earth have not asked to join the conclave," I said.
"Don't spouse nonsense at me, Hofta," Laos said sharply. "There isn't a representative in the assembly who doesn't know that the general intends to offer Earth significant trade and technological concessions, with the intent of drawing them into the conclave sooner than later."
"The general has never said anything of the sort."
"Not publicly," Laos said. "He's been content to let his friends in the assembly do that for him. Unless you believe that we don't know who is working Bruff Bryn Gus's levers on this subject. It's not been exactly discreet about the favors it can pull from the General now, or from you, for that matter. I made a note to schedule a meeting with Representative Bruff at the earliest convenience. It had been warned against preening to the other Assembly representatives. You think Hotto would use any deal with Earth as leverage for a confidence vote, I said. I think Hotto has a hatred of humans that borders on outright racism. Even though the Earth is not affiliated with the Colonial Union. That's a distinction too subtle for Hotto, Mouse said. Or perhaps it's more accurate to say that it's a distinction that Hotto will not bother to make, either for himself or to others, because it would interfere with his plans.
Which are?
Do you have to ask? Laos said. Hotto hates the humans, but he loves them too, because they might get him to the job he really wants. At least he thinks so. The conclave will have collapsed before he can get much use of it.
So remove the humans and we remove his lever.
You remove the lever that he's grasping today, Laos said. He has others.
She reached for her cup of yet, saw that it had grown cold, and set it back down again. My assistant Uman popped his head into the room. My next meeting partner had arrived. I nodded to him and then stood. Laos stood as well. Thank you, Riston, I said. As always, our chat has been useful and enlightening.
I hope so, Laos said. A final piece of advice for the day, if I may. Get Hotto in here the next chance you get. He's not going to tell you what he has planned, but it's everything else he says that will matter anyway. Talk to him even briefly, and you'll know what I know. And you'll know why I worry the Conclave is in trouble.
That is very good advice, I said. I plan to take it very soon.
How soon?
As soon as you leave me, I said. Yunli Hotto is my next appointment.
I'm worried that the Conclave is being pushed toward destruction,
Yunli Hotto said to me, almost before I had time to sit down after welcoming him into my office. Well, this is certainly a dramatic way to begin our discussion, Representative, I said. Uman discreetly slipped back into the office and deposited two bowls on my desk, one closer to me and one closer to Hotto. Hotto's was filled with niti, an elpri breakfast food that would kill me if I attempted to eat it, but which Hotto was known to relish. My own bowl had tidbits on it shaped like niti, but made of lalan vegetable matter. I did not wish to die in this particular meeting. I had other plans for the rest of the sir. I nodded thanks to Uman. Hotto appeared not to notice him. Uman slipped back out of the room.
I didn't know that coming to you with a concern would be dismissed as drama, Hotto said.
He reached over and fished one of the niti out of his bowl and then started sucking on it, loudly. I did not know enough about elpri table manners to decide whether he was being rude. I would in no way dismiss your concerns, as drama or anything else, I replied. But you may understand that from my end, leading with the destruction of the Conclave doesn't leave much room for anything else.
Does General Gao still intend to bring the humans into the Conclave?
Hotto asked. You know as well as I do that the General never lobbies a species to join the Conclave, I said. He merely shows them the advantages and allows them to ask if they are interested.
That's a nice fiction, Hotto said.
He swallowed his niti and reached for another. If the humans ask to join the Conclave, if either of the human governments ask to join the Conclave, because as you know there is more than one, then they would go through the same process as everyone else has.
For which the General would heavily place his support for the humans.
I would imagine only to the extent he has done for any of our species, including the Elpri, Representative Hotto. You may recall him standing in the well of the Grand Assembly, praising your people at the time of the vote.
For which, of course, I offer him many thanks.
As you should, I said. As should every member state of our conclave. In point of fact, to date, the General has welcomed every species who has asked to join and was willing to accept the terms of union. I wonder why you would think. If, in fact, either human government wanted to join our union, that the general would do otherwise.
It's because I know something about the humans that the general does not.
Secret information, I said, and reached for one of my own tidbits. With all due respect, Representative, your track record on secret information regarding the humans is spotty. Hotto offered what to anyone else would appear to be a genial smile.
I am well aware that I have a history of falling into the traps that you've set for me, Counselor. But between ourselves, let's not pretend that we don't know what really happened.
I'm not entirely sure I catch your meaning, I said pleasantly.
Have it your way, Hotto said,
and then reached into his vest to pull out a data module. He placed it on my desk between us. Is this your secret information? I asked.
It's not secret. Just not well known. Yet.
Will you give me a précis, or should I just plug it into my computer?
You should look at all of it, Hotto said. But the short version is that a whistleblower from the Colonial Union has released information on all of the Colonial Union's military and intelligence operations for the last several of their decades, including the destruction of our fleet at Roanoke, the attacks on Conclave ships and planets using pirated Conclave member trade ships, biological experimentation on Conclave citizens, and the attack on Earth Station.
I picked up the data module. How was this whistleblower able to procure all this information?
He was an undersecretary of the Colonial Union State Department.
I don't suppose this undersecretary is available to us.
My understanding is that the Colonial Union reacquired him, Hotto said. If the colonial standard practices hold, if he's not already dead, he's a brain suspended in a jar.
I'm curious how this information came to you, Representative Hotto.
I got it this morning by diplomatic courier drone from Elpri, Hotto said. The information has been readily available there for an Elprian day. The information was apparently released widely. I wouldn't be surprised if you're offered the information by others, including your own planetary government, Counselor. Nor would I be surprised if it's offered to the Conclave itself by the end of the Sir.
We don't know if this information is reliable, is what you're telling me.
What I've read of it, which has been the most recent events, primarily, seems accurate,
Hotto said.
It explains at the very least why we've been losing trade and cargo ships, and how the Colonial Union has been using them against us.
It might not surprise you to know that the Colonial Union has maintained their own civilian ships have been pirated. I won't deny I am not fond of humanity,
but that isn't to say that I think they are stupid, Hotto said. Of course they would be doing a magnificent job of obfuscating their plans.
And what are their plans, Representative Hotto? I asked.
The destruction of the Conclave, obviously, Hotto said. They tried and failed at Roanoke Colony. They are trying again by using our own trade ships against us.
At that rate, they should topple us at about the same time as the heat death of the universe, I said.
It's not the physical damage. It's persisting, despite the obvious strength of the Conclave.
And attacking Earth Station, I said. How does that relate to the Conclave?
The Colonial Union has denied the attack. Who else should Earth think could orchestrate it?
But you don't want the humans in the Conclave in any event.
Neither do I want Earth reconciled with the Colonial Union, offering its soldiers and colonists again.
In which case, I'm not sure why you would oppose Earth's admission into the Conclave, I said. That would shut the door to the Colonial Union using it as a recruiting station.
And frustrate the Colonial Union even further, making them more dangerous, Hotto said. And aside from that, how would we ever be able to trust any humans? If one group of humans were at war with us and the other our ally, how many of our so-called allies would feel obliged by species solidarity to act against our interests?
We are damned if we admit the humans and damned if we don't.
There is a third option,
Hotto said. I stiffened at this. You know the general's opinion on preemptive war, Representative Hotto, I said, and on genocide.
Please, Counselor,
Hotto said.
I am suggesting neither, obviously. I am suggesting, however, that war with the humans is inevitable. Sooner or later, they will attack out of opportunism or out of fear.
He pointed to the data module.
The information here makes that much clear. And when they do, if the general does not have a response, then I fear what happens next for the conclave.
The conclave is robust, I said.
Again, it's not the physical damage to the conclave I worry about. The conclave exists because its members are confident in its leader. The general spared the humans once when he could have crushed them. If he does it twice, there comes the legitimate question of why and for what purpose, and whether his judgment can be relied upon any further.
And if the answer is no, then I suppose you have an idea of who might take his place, I said, to restore this confidence.
You misunderstand me, Counselor,
Hotto said.
You always have. You think I have ambitions beyond my station. I assure you, I do not. I never have. What I want is what you want and what the general wants. The conclave whole and secure. He has the power to keep it that way. He has the power to destroy it. It all depends on how he deals with the humans. All of them.
Hotto stood, bowed, took a final needy from his bowl, and left.
He thinks this is going to be the thing that destroys the conclave, Vinok Oi said,
holding the data module Yun Li Hotto had given me. I had traveled to its office, in part to get a change of scenery, and in part because, as the conclave's head of intelligence, its office was substantially more secure than my own. I think it's more the thing Hotto plans to use to try to oust Tarsum, I said.
It took some nerve to drop it on your desk, Oi said. He might as well have put a sign up over his head announcing his plans.
Plausible deniability, I said. It can never be said. He was not the first to alert us to this information, and the dangers within. He's being the perfect example of a helpful and faithful officer of the conclave. Oi gave a whistle of derision.
The gods should protect us from such faithfulness, it said.
I pointed to the data module. What do we know about this?
We know Hotto wasn't lying about how he got it, Oi said. This information has showed up at several dozen conclave worlds already, and more reports are coming in. The data is consistent across the various planets. It even showed up here.
How?
Diplomatic courier skip drone. Credentials forged, which we determined right away, but we examined the data anyway. Same data as in every other packet we've been offered.
Any idea where it came from?
No, Oi said. The skip drone is Fan Wei manufacture. They make hundreds of thousands of them a year. The drone's navigational cache was clear, no skip history on it. The data itself was unencrypted and in standard conclave format.
Have you looked at it?
There's too much to just look at. Reading it manually would take more time than we'd want. We've got computers doing semantic and data analysis on it to get the important information and trends. That will still take several, sir.
I mean, did you look at it? I said.
Of course, Oi said. There was a document that came with it, highlighting particular bits of information whoever sent it thought might be relevant to us. I skimmed.
What do you think?
Officially or personally?
Both.
Officially, anonymous information that shows up randomly at one's door should be treated as suspicious until proven otherwise. That said, the documents we've done spot analysis on conform strongly to the Colonial Union's data formatting and known activity. If it's fake, it's very cleverly done. At least superficially.
And personally?
You know we have sources in the Colonial Union, yes? Oi said. Ones I don't go out of my way to let either you or the General know too much about.
Of course.
As soon as this started popping up, I sent a query to one of them about this alleged whistleblower, this Undersecretary Ocampo. Just before you got here, I got a ping back. He exists, or at least did exist. He went missing several of their months ago. He would have had access to this information. So, personally, I think it's very possible this is legitimate.
Hotto seemed to be under the impression that the Colonial Union had found this Ocampo.
I have no information on that, and I'd be curious to know how he does, Oi said.
It might be a rumor.
This would be the time for rumors about this information, Oi agreed. Do you want me to look into it?
Before I could answer, my handheld buzzed out the sequence that told me Uman was trying to reach me for a critical purpose. I answered.
Your manicurist called and wishes to inquire about your next appointment, Uman said.
I'm in Oi's office, Uman, I said, glancing over at Oi, whose expression was studiously neutral. And you can be sure it already knows about my manicurist.
I'll just send the message over then, Uman said.
Thank you.
I terminated the call and waited for the message. Thank you for not being offended that I know your business, Oi said.
Thank you for not pretending to be offended that I would suggest you know my business, I said. The message arrived.
And what does Colonel Rigney of the Colonial Union have to say? Oi asked.
He says, by this time you've probably seen the data alleging to be from our Department of State Undersecretary Ocampo, I read. Some of it is true, much of it is not. What is not is of concern to both the Colonial Union and the Conclave. We are sending an envoy to treat with the Conclave on this, to reach an amicable resolution before things escalate. She is Ambassador Ode Abumwe, known to you, and will be in possession of information to clarify or refute what you have in your possession. I ask, with the basis of our previous association as proof of earnest intent, that you see her and hear what she has to say. And then there's data on Ambassador Mbumwe's intended arrival time and position.
The Colonial Union's coming here without pretense, Oi said. That's interesting.
They want to indicate their openness, I said.
That's one interpretation, Oi said. Another is that they don't think they have time to do their usual sneaking about before this blows up in their faces. And another will be that this is simply a move in a long-term game to maneuver us to where they can strike us most effectively.
That's not been my experience of Colonel Rigney or Ambassador Abumwe.
Which doesn't matter much, because officially you haven't had any experience with either Rigney or Abumwe, have you? Oi said, and raised tendrils to pause my reply. It's not about what you or I think, Hafta. It's about how Yunle Hado and those around him will interpret the Colonial Union's move here.
You think we shouldn't meet with them?
I don't have an opinion, one way or another, Oi said, lying diplomatically. That's not my job, but I do suggest that you talk with the General about it and find out what he and you want to do, and that you do it sooner than later. Immediately would be my suggestion.
I have another meeting first, I said.
You know that the nations of Earth would never condone or participate in any action that would bring about the destruction of the Conclave, said Reagan Byrne, the envoy to the Conclave from the United Nations, a diplomatic corporation that was not actually the government of the Earth, but which pretended to be for situations like this.
I nodded, minutely, to avoid hitting my head on Byrne's ceiling. Byrne's offices were former storage units that had been hastily cleared out when it was decided that it would be beneficial to have an Earth presence of some sort at the Conclave headquarters. These storage units were amply tall for most conclave species, but then again, Lollins were tall, and I was taller than most. I stood because there was nowhere for me to sit. Byrne usually came to see me, not the other way around, and her office did not have a stool that would accommodate me. Byrne had the grace to look embarrassed by this fact. I assure you that no one in the Conclave has suggested that this new information has cast the Earth in a suspicious light, I said, choosing not to mention that Yunli Hado, in point of fact, had accused the planet of being full of traitors and spies. What I am interested in knowing, prior to my meeting with General Gao, is whether the Earth has received this information and what their response has been to it.
I was about to call Uman when he called me to set up this meeting, Byrne said. I received a skip drone from the UN this morning with the information, to give to you in case you did not already have it, and the denial of involvement that I just offered you. Done up much more formally, of course. I will have all of it sent to your office.
Thank you.
I have been also told to tell you that we are sending a formal diplomatic party to brief the Conclave on the Earth's definitive response to this new information. They will be here in less than a week. The diplomatic party is under the aegis of the UN, but will consist of representatives of several Earth governments. That information is also in the data packet I am sending along.
Yes, fine, I said. This meant that we were about to be in the rather awkward position of having diplomatic representatives from both the Earth and the Colonial Union at the Conclave's headquarters at the same time. This would have to be managed. I frowned.
Everything all right, Counselor Sorval?
Byrne asked. Of course, I said, and smiled. Byrne offered up a weak smile in return. I remembered that my smile looked rather ghastly to humans. In no small part because it was offered by a creature who was close to twice their height. This will all be of great use to me when I meet with the General.
That's good to hear, Byrne said.
And how are you, Reagan? I asked. I'm afraid I don't see you or other members of your mission as often as I would like.
We're good, Byrne said, and I was aware that I was once again being lied to diplomatically. I think most of the staff are still getting our bearings and learning the map of the station. It's very large. Larger than some cities back on Earth.
Yes, it is, I said. The headquarters of the Conclave was a space station carved into a large asteroid and was one of the largest engineered objects ever made, not counting some of the more impressive bits made by the Khonsu, a race so technologically advanced above the rest of the species in this area of space that they should not be included in an estimation, simply out of politeness to everyone else. It would have to be, I continued. We have to house representatives from 400 worlds, all their staff, and many of their families, plus a great number of the Conclave's own government workers and their families, plus all the support workers and their families. It adds up.
Is your family here, Counselor Sorval?
I smiled, more gently this time. Lollins don't quite have the family structure that humans and many other species do. We are more communally oriented, is the best way to put it. But there is a strong Lollin community here. It's very comforting.
It's good to hear, Byrne said. I miss my family and other humans. It's lovely here, but sometimes you just miss home.
I know what you mean, I said to her.
If the Conclave must end, at least this is a pretty place for the end to begin,
General Tarsim Gao, leader of the Conclave, said to me, standing next to where I sat in the Lollin Community Park. The park, one of the first created on the Conclave's asteroid, was large enough for all 300 of the Lollins stationed at Conclave headquarters to meet, relax, deposit eggs, and monitor the hatched young as they grew. Tarsim spotted some of the Lollin young playing on a rock on the far side of the park's small lake.
Any of yours? He asked,
jokingly, because he knew I was too old for further egg-laying. But I answered him seriously. One or both of them might be Uman's, I said. He and one of the diplomats were in phase not too long ago, and she laid her eggs here. Those young are just about the right size to be theirs. There was a sudden squawk as an older youth emerged from behind the rock, wrapped its jaws around one of the two youth sunning themselves, and began to bite down. The trapped youth began to struggle, The other one scuttled away. We watched as the younger youth fought to survive and lost. After a moment, the larger youth stole away, younger youth still in its jaws, to eat it in privacy. Tarsem turned to me.
"That still always amazes me," he said.
"That our young prey on each other," I asked.
"That it doesn't bother you that they do," he said. "Not just you, you or any Lawlin adult. You understand that most intelligent species are fiercely protective of their young."
"As are we," I replied, "after a certain point. After their brains develop and their consciousness emerges. Before then, they are simply animals, and there are so many of them."
"Did you feel that way when they were your own?"
"I didn't know which were mine at the age of that unfortunate youth," I said. "We lay our eggs in common, you know. We go to our local common ground, to the laying house. I'd lay my eggs into a receiving basket and take the basket to the house supervisor. The supervisor would put them in a room set up for the eggs the house received that day. 30 or 40 women would lay eggs at a house each day, 10 to 50 eggs each. 15 of our days to hatch, and then another 5 days, before the outside door to the room was opened, to let the surviving young out into the park. We didn't see the eggs again once we left them. Even if we went back the day the outside door was opened, we wouldn't know which of the survivors were our own."
"But I've met your children."
"You met them after they grew into consciousness," I said. "Once you're an adult, you're allowed to take a genetic test to learn who your parents are, provided they had consented to be placed in the database. The two you met are the ones who decided to find out. I may have had others who survived, but they either didn't take the test or chose not to contact me. Not everyone asks to know. I didn't."
"It's so...
alien." Tarsem nodded. I laughed. "Well, Tarsem, I am an alien to you, and you to me, and all of us to each other. And yet here we are, friends, as we have been for most of our lives now.
The conscious parts of it, anyway."
I motioned back to the rock, where the youth who had run away had returned. "You think the way we call our young is cruel?"
"I wouldn't say that," Tarsem said.
"Of course you wouldn't say it," I said. "You wouldn't say it because you're diplomatic. But it doesn't mean you don't think it."
"All right," Tarsem admitted. "It does seem cruel."
"That's because it is," I said, turning again to Tarsem. "Terrible and cruel. And the fact that adult Lawlins can just watch it happen and not weep in agony over it means that we might be terrible and cruel as well. But we know a story that other people don't."
"What's the story?"
"The story is that not too long ago in Lawlin history, a philosopher named Lumt Both convinced most of Lala that how we called our young was wrong and immoral. He and his followers convinced us to protect all of our young, to allow them all to grow into sentience, and to reap the benefits of the knowledge and progress so many new-thinking individuals would give us. I imagine you think you know where this is going."
"Overpopulation, famine, and death, I would guess,"
Tarsem said. "And you would be wrong, because those are obvious things to be planned for and dealt with," I said. "We did have a massive population boom, but we'd also developed spaceflight. It's one reason why Both suggested we stop culling our young. We populated colony worlds quickly and grew an empire of 20 worlds almost overnight. Both's strategy gave us a foothold into the universe, and for a time he was revered as the greatest Lawlin." Tarsem smiled at me.
"If this is meant to be a cautionary tale, you're doing a bad job of it, Hofta," he said.
"It's not done yet," I said. "What Both missed, what we all missed, was the fact that our preconscious life is not wasted. How we survive our culling leaves its traces in our brains. In point of fact, in a very real sense, it gives us wisdom, gives us restraint, gives us mercy and empathy for each other and for other intelligent species. Imagine, if you will, Tarsem, billions of my people emerging into consciousness without wisdom, without restraint, without mercy and empathy. Imagine the worlds they would make. Imagine what they would do to others."
"They could be monsters," Tarsem said.
"Yes, they could.
And yes, we were. And in a very short time, we tore each other apart and tore apart every other intelligent species we met, until we had lost our empire and almost lost ourselves. We were terrible and cruel. And in time, we wept in agony over it, and everyone we had doomed to a conscious death. I pointed again to the youth on the rock. What happens to our young on their way to consciousness is pitiless, but it strengthens us as a people. We take our pain and our risk early, and as a result, we as a people are saved.
Well, Tarsem said, this is not what I was expecting when I suggested we meet here. I just thought it was a pretty place to talk.
It is a pretty place, I said. It's just not nice.
Tell me what you think about the news today.
About the Ocampo data, I asked. Tarsem nodded. I think it means very bad things for the Conclave. Ristin Laus is right, Tarsem. The Conclave is in a fragile state, because you've been pushing things too hard, including bringing the humans of Earth into the Conclave. I've warned you about that.
You have.
And you haven't listened.
I've listened, Tarsem said. I have reasons not to agree.
I gave Tarsem a look that expressed my disapproval, which he took without complaint. I continued. She's also right that if you lose a confidence vote, it could fracture the Conclave. You already have dozens of species wanting to bolt and either go it alone or form smaller alliances they think they will be able to control. If you give the Conclave an opportunity to crack, it will crack.
That's independent of the Ocampo data.
But the Ocampo data feeds right into that, I said. It seemingly confirms that the humans can't be trusted and that they mean us harm. The Colonial Union portion of humanity, in any event. If you try to bring Earth into the Conclave after this, Yunli Hado will use that to suggest that you're letting the enemy through the front door.
So we hold off on admitting Earth into the Conclave.
Then Hado hits you with leaving it available to the Colonial Union to retake. Make no mistake, Tarsem. Hado is going to use Earth against you no matter what you do. And if you take the unspeakable third option of attacking the Colonial Union without direct provocation, Hado will use your first military defeat as an opportunity for the confidence vote he's looking for. Every option leads to the Assembly voting to remove you. And when that happens, it all falls apart.
This used to be easier, Tarsem said, running the Conclave.
That's because you were building it, I said. It's easier to be the aspirational leader when the thing you're building doesn't exist. But now it exists. And you're not aspirational anymore. Now you're just the chief bureaucrat. Bureaucrats don't inspire awe.
Do we have time to finesse this?
We might have had, if both the Colonial Union and the Earth weren't sending full suites of diplomats for discussions, I said. Having one set of them would be bad enough. Having them both posturing over the Ocampo data means that Hado and his partisans are going to have real, live targets for their ire, and might use that to push a confidence vote sooner than later. If you think they're going to miss an opportunity to trim down your reputation with real-life human diplomats, then you'll be playing right into their hands.
Then tell me what you suggest, Tarsem said.
That you don't see Ambassador Abomwe when she arrives. Turn her away publicly. That deprives Hado of the spectacle of the Colonial Union being received diplomatically.
And what about the new information they promised?
Leave that to me. Colonel Rigney and I can set up a meeting and I can get it then, all discreetly.
He won't be happy.
We don't need him to be happy, I said. We need him to understand the political landscape we're working in. I can make him do that.
And the diplomats from Earth?
We'll have to meet with them, I said. And as for Earth itself, we need to get it out of the reach of the Colonial Union without bringing it into the Conclave. Tarsem smiled.
I'm looking forward to hearing how this is going to happen,
he said. We have them ask for protection, I said.
Protection? Tarsem said. From whom?
From the Colonial Union, who attacked Earth Station,
I said.
If it did.
It doesn't matter if it did. It matters that Earth believes it's a threat. Tarsem gave me a look that suggested a complicated response to this statement, but decided not to immediately follow it up.
So they ask for protection, he said. What does that solve?
It solves Yunli Hado, for one, I said. Because the Earth doesn't ask to join the Conclave, and it doesn't stay vulnerable to the Colonial Union. And when it asks for protection, we'll assign 3 of our member states to take up the guard.
Which 3?
2 of them, it doesn't matter. Pick who you like. But the third
is the Elpri,
Tarsem said. Yes, I said. And then Hado is trapped. His entire ploy is based on you being too soft on the humans. But now one branch of humanity is publicly rebuffed, and the other is guarded by Hado's own species. He said to me today that his sole concern is the unity of the Conclave. Let's hold him to his words, and let's make him do it publicly. He's trapped by his own posturing.
And you think the Earth will go along with this?
I think they believe we both have a common enemy, and they know they are defenseless without us, I said. The only thing we have to do is not make it look like we're bottling them up, like they were under the Colonial Union.
Although that's exactly what you're proposing we do.
These are the options at the moment.
And you think this will actually work,
Tarsem said. I think it buys us time. I turned back to the rock where the young Lalan had been a few minutes before and noticed it wasn't there anymore. There was a splotch of blood, however. Whether it belonged to the youth or the one who had been killed before it, I didn't know. Maybe enough time to save the Conclave from collapsing. And that's enough for now.